Okay, today's daf is Samach Bet. We're going to start at the fourth line, Bishlama the Rabbi Chanina. For us, the Mala Boz Ben Shoshana, Dvar Batino, Zavram Shimon Ben Chana, or the Penin about Rachel Frida, Chayamach, Esther Batsipor, Yosef Ben Rachele, about Rivka, Yael, Miriam Bat Chaya, Yaakov Ben Rosa, Daphne Chaya Bat Sarah, Tayy Rachel Bat Tamar Sarah, Lilo Nishma Chana Bat Atar Reza Bat Sarah, Tzvi Hirsch Ben Yaakov, Halevi Umela. Okay, we were in the middle of this machloket we saw between Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah on Samach Aleph Amud Aleph and Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, whether a condition has to be a Tanai Kaful, where you have to say, if this happens, then this will happen, and if not, then etc. Whether you need that, according to Rabbi Meir, if you didn't say both sides, then the Tanai is not valid, versus Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, and he learns it from the Tanai Reuven God and Chatzi Shepet Menasheh. And because it says it in the Torah, and Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, his approach was, no, it doubled it in the Torah. It said itself and its opposite only because it needed it for, you wouldn't have concluded the opposite otherwise. You wouldn't have known exactly what to conclude. So, and then we saw two options of what you might have concluded, right? Either they wouldn't get Nachala at all, or they would get Nachala in Eretz Yisrael and not in, they would get a 12th of their portion only in the Gilad and not a 12th of the entire portion, including Eretz Canaan. Okay, so then the Gemara proceeded to quote all sorts of cases in the Tanakh where it says a Tanai Kaful and say, well, this seems to be difficult to Rabbi Meir, to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, because here also the Torah duplicated. Now we're going to bring a case that seems to side with Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, where they don't say a Tanai Kaful, and yet it seems to be good. Bishlama the Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. It makes sense to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Hainu dichtiv im lo shachav ishotach v'im lo sati tum'ah tachrishech hinaki. Misota, if you remember, what did it say there? If he didn't sleep with her and she wasn't a sota and she didn't veer off to do something tameh under her husband, hinaki, she will be cleaned. And the next pasuk, now you have to see this inside, the next pasuk is I'm just finding it. The next pasuk is Ve'at kisati tachad ishech v'chinit meit. Okay, and if you are a sota and you become tameh, v'itain ish b'achad shifratomi baladei ishech, and then v'ishpia kohen, etc., and the kohen makes you swear. But this isn't set up exactly as if you did and if you didn't, this will happen and that will happen. It's not exactly like that. And therefore, they say that this seems to support the claim of Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, where it just says, if you didn't, now what's the issue really? What's the main, when you make a Tanai, even if you're doing a Tanai Kaful, what do you have to say? You have to say first the condition, and then if it doesn't happen. Now, in this case, they started with, if it wasn't the case, right? What's the major thing of Sota? If she was Tameh. So here, it's the reverse order, and it's not exactly set up as a Tanai Kaful. The structure isn't exactly clear-cut. So they say, here you see this supports Chanina ben Gamliel. Ela, le Rabbi Meir, if you would say, according to Rabbi Meir, what should it have said? Chin ki mebayale. It should have said, she should be choked. In other words, if she did it, she should be choked. So, Amar Rabbi Tanchum, hina ki k'tiv, which means, okay, this is, what does this mean? It means hinaki could be written in two ways. It could be written hey yud nun kaf yud, he as in, you know, with the yud, or it could be written without the yud. So what does he say? The fact that it's written without a yud means that it could also be read as hinaki. Now remember, the hey and the chet in the Hebrew language look very similar. One has, it's just missing a little bit. So what is he suggesting here? That this is how you should read the psukim. So going back to pasuk yudtet, im lo shachav ishotach v'im lo sati tumat tachad ishech, chinaki mimei hamarim ha'elu v'at kisatit. In other words, you'll be choked if you did do it. It's putting the end of the pasuk in a different place, really. That the chinaki, more like it can go both ways. We can darshan it to be, you will be clean, but we can also read it as, chinki will be choked if kisatit. Okay, and they jump it forward, and that's how Rabbi Meir would read it. Bishlama le Rabbi Meir, hainu dichtiv hinaki. So now it makes sense according to Rabbi Meir, because the hinaki goes also on the next. Ela le Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel lamali. So the assumption now is that this reading would also, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel would have to read it this way. So what will he say? So he says, no, itzdrich. Salkadat hachamina, im lo shachav ish hinaki, ואם שכב, לא הינקי ולא חינקי. אלא איסור בעלמא, כמה שמלן. So now, obviously they had two ways of answering this. They could have just said that Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel doesn't darshin this chinaki, hinaki drasha. But instead, what do they say? Even if he holds by the drasha, you would still need it, and it goes with all those answers from yesterday, that you might have thought that she wouldn't necessarily get a punishment, right? If she's clear, right, it would be strange. Then why, right, why do you need the sota at all, right? It would be strange to say this, but they're saying you could say if you didn't sleep with him, then great, you'll be totally cleansed, right? In other words, what they're doing is they're looking at the sota orders as a way of, it's actually interesting, according to this perspective, the sota is not really to punish her. The sota is to, and we talked about this when we learned it, the sota is to purify the woman from the suspicions of her husband. In other words, here's a suspicious husband who's getting jealous of his wife and, you know, some other guy. And here she has a way to prove her innocence. And that's what it's all about. So if she can prove her innocence, great. But if not, well, then, okay, whatever. Nothing will happen.
If it doesn't choke her.
What?
How would it prove the innocence if she doesn't choke her?
No, choking her would be, right, so they're saying, yeah, that's a good question. So there'd be no way, if the alternative is nothing, right, that there'd be have to... Right, so again, you'd have to look at sota in a different way. You'd have to say there would be some way, and this is all in the realm of possibilities, right? There would be some way that she'd be proving her innocence, and if not, then you'd have to say the sota words were different. Maybe something would happen to her, but it wouldn't necessarily choke her or kill her or anything like that. It's definitely questioning all sorts of assumptions we have about sota.
Is choking to keep her from talking?
No, the choking is to actually, right, you're saying it's to kill her.
Yeah.
You're saying why specifically
why
choking?
That, yes.
That's interesting. That would be an image because here she was talking to a man, and
exactly.
That's what caused her.
Yeah.
Right, yafet. That's a good connection. Okay, next one. Now we're moving on to para aduma. Okay, this is where we sprinkle the waters of the red heifer onto a person to purify him. So bishlama la Rabbi Meir hainu dichtiv hu yitchatabo bayom ashlishi u bayom ashvi hu yitchatabo bayom ashlishi u bayom ashvi'i yitar. Okay, he will be purified by it, and on the third day and on the seventh day, he will be purified. V'im lo yitchata, and then the pasuk continues, and if he doesn't do it, bayom hashlishi ubayom hashvi'i lo yitar. Here we have a very, right, there was no reason, he had said, if he purifies himself on the third and the seventh day, he'll be purified, and if not, he won't be. It's the exact perfect proof for Rabbi Meir. So, Bishamala Rabbi Meir, because that's what it says. El Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel Lamali. Itzdrich, no, we still need it. Why? Salkada tachamina mitzvat hazaabish the shiu bashvi'i. Vehecha da'abi b'chaminayu avid. There's a mitzvah to do it on the third and the seventh day. But if he did only on one of them, well, that'll be sufficient. So therefore, it's telling you, right? In other words, let's read it this way. If you do it on the third and the seventh day, you'll be purified. And then if it didn't have the second half, you'd say, but if he only did it one b'dievet, it would be okay. So kamash malan, that you're not going to be purified if you didn't do it on both. That's why it has to repeat it. Now we're going to continue to ask some questions like we did before. Once we're into these psukim, let's ask a little bit more. B'hizah ha-tahor ala tamei. So then it says later, they sprinkle, the tahor person sprinkles on the tamei person. Bayom ha-shlishi u-bayom ha-shvi'i, on the third and the seventh. Lamali. So what do we need this for now to tell you? We already said it before. So salkadata chamina shlishi lemiute sheni shvi lemiute shishi to come in my bime tahara. You might have thought, then why does it say three to mean not two? And why does it say seven to mean not six? In other words, you can't minimize the days of tahara. You need a full 7 days, and you need a full 3 days, or you know, the 2 days before the third day to do the first sprinkling, and then you need to wait till the seventh to do the last one. But what might you have misunderstood? Aval hecha da'avi b'shlishi u'bashmini. You might have thought, let's say, though, you're dekamafish b'mei tahara. If you added another day, right, this sounds very much, I don't know if you're thinking about this, but it sounds like in the counting of the nida, right? It's also, you know, even they say the minimum shiur of bedikot is the third day and the seventh day. It's very, you know, it's all similar. There's a connection between all this. And there's also a whole thing. What if you, I mean, there it's the first day versus the seventh day. What if you did a bedik only on the first and not the seventh? What if you did only on the seventh and not the first? So the whole discussion in the Gemara about it. We'll get there when we get to Nida at the very end. So, Salkadata Chamina, you might have thought, Shlishi Lemute Sheni and that, but But one second, Shlishi b'shmini kamavish meitara ema shapir dami. So you might have thought 3 and 8 is fine. Kamash malan that it's not fine. Therefore, it says, go back to the pasuk. Kizator alatame bayoma shlishi ubayoma shvi. Those are the, in other words, you have to have 4 days in between, right? In other words, it's from 3 to 7. If you go from 3 to 8, it's no good anymore. You have to have your sprinklings within 4 days of each other, and that's what the extra pasuk teaches you. Then it says, Vichito bayom ha-shvi. Okay, that's the continuation of that pasuk. Yizator alatame bayom ha-shvi bayom ha-shvi. Vichito bayom ha-shvi. And he purifies him on the seventh day. Now, this seems strange. We already know this, right? What's it telling you? Lamali, what do we need this for? Itzrich. You need it because sakata tachamina hanimile lekodshim. Avalachuma b'chad nami sagya kamashmanam. Well, we explained before that you definitely need both. It's not good b'dievet if you only did one. But now they're saying there's another repetition to teach you that you shouldn't think, and we've always learned that there's a higher level of tahara for kodshim than for truma. Remember, there's shlishi, right? A sheni can be make a shlishi tamei for truma, not for a chulin, and a revi'i, right? A shlishi can make a revi'i tamei for kodshim. So kodshim's on a higher level. So you might have thought that the 3 and the 7 are absolutely necessary for kodshim, but maybe for truma, if by accident you missed your day and you didn't do it, and you only did one of them, it would be okay. Kamash malan, the repetition in the pasuk of saying, v'chit o bayam shvi, the only way you're going to be tahor is if you make sure, right, on the seventh day after you've done the 2 sprinklings before. Okay, so that was a total digression. Now we're going to go back to a new Mishnah. And this is similar to a Mishnah that we didn't actually learn together from the section on Mem Ted and Nun about Dvarim Shabalei Ve'nam Dvarim. Right? If you don't actually express them in words, very basic. We're going to get to 2 very basic sugyot today. Oh, I promise, by the way, before we move on, I would get to the Tanai Kaful about the halachot. Mm-hmm. So the Gaonim Paskin, that the Tanai Kaful, like Rabbi Meir, the Rabbi Meir only meant it, or we only hold that way, in Kiddushin and Gerushin, but not in Dine Mamonot. The Rambam says it's also Dine Mamonot. Okay, he says, why would you make a distinction? The Shulchan Aruch Paskin's like the Gaonim. Interestingly, often the Shulchan Aruch Paskin's like the Rambam, that it's just in Kiddushin and Gerushin. And there's another opinion that there's certain situations where it's so obvious that you don't need to do a Tanai Kaful. And then it becomes very tricky because, you know, where do you say, right? So there's different categories. There's a whole categorization I have where it's, what if it's a Giloy Milta, where it's so obviously clear. You said something, it wasn't exactly that, but it's obvious that that's what you mean. So that there might be certain cases where it's so obvious that you don't even need to do the Tanai Kaful, but in other cases where it's less obvious, then you would need it. And that obviously opens a very gray waters as to when exactly you would and when you wouldn't. Anyway, there's no clear cut psak, just so you should know. Shouldn't surprise us. Hamikadesh Taisha Va'amar, Kasavur Hayiti Shehi Kohenet, Vaharehi Leviyah. He betroths a woman. Now, this is different from what we saw before. This is actually quoted in the Gemara earlier on those dapim there. Here, he betroths a woman saying, I thought she was a Kohenet. Now, it's not like he said, al menachi Kohenet. He didn't put a t'nai saying, I'm marrying you on the t'nai that you're, obviously this means a bat Kohen. Okay? But he says, I thought you were. And it turns out she's a Leviyah. Leviyah v'harei Kohenet. Or he says, I thought you were a Leviyah. And it turns out you were a Kohenet. Aniya v'harehi ashira. I thought you were poor, and it turns out you're rich. Ashira v'harehi aniya. He thought she was rich, it turns out she was poor. Harezo mekudeshet mipnei. Now, before we even read on, what would you assume? She's mekudeshet because he didn't make an explicit t'nai. It's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says mekudeshet mipnei shelo hita'ato. She didn't mislead him. Now, this. There's 2 ways to read this now, and there's a difference among the Mefarshim.
What if
she did deceive him? Huh. Okay? Then, maybe you could claim it was a mekach ta'ut, right? Other people say, no, since he didn't stipulate that this was a condition, it's Dvarim Shebalev, and Dvarim Shebalev, and I'm Dvarim, just because he thought it doesn't mean, right? And then, the mipnei shehita'ato is a little, right, it's not necessarily necessary there. And then you have to wonder why it says that. Ha'omer l'isha, harei mekudeshet li l'achar she'etgayer, o l'achar she'titgayri. Okay, he goes to a woman and he says, you'll be betrothed to me, right? It's a non-Jewish man, and he says, once I convert. Okay, maybe he's going through a conversion process, or he says to her, she's not Jewish, and he says, after you become a Jew. Lachar she'eshtachrer, Eved Kenani, remember, once he's mishtachrer, he becomes a full-fledged Jew. Likewise, a shibcha Kenania. O lachar she'tishtachreri. Okay, we're going to see now, that one of the Mefreshim says it very well, that we're going it's like a hierarchy here. We're starting from the most chamor to the least, okay? We're starting from someone who's not Jewish at all, then someone who's an Eved or a shibcha Kenani, where they're somewhat partaking in mitzvot. La'achar she'yamut ba'alech or la'achar she'tamut achotech. This is Isur Arayo Mida Oraita, right? It, once your sister dies and then I can marry you, because you can marry someone who you were married to her sister if she's after her death, or after your husband dies, meaning right now it's Eshed Ish, right? She's married to someone else, but after your husband dies, you'll be betrothed to me. La'achar she'yachlotz lach yivimech. Remember we said that once she's supposed to marry the Yabam, she can't marry anyone else. But it says in the Pasuk, Lo tiyeh chutza li'ish zar. So what does that mean? It's an Isur Lav. It's not Isur Arayo, like Esh Ed Ish. Okay, it's not Karet, like the previous case. So now there's your levels. All these cases, okay, we're going to get to one more now. V'chein omer l'chaveiro, Im yalda ishtech nikeva, harezo mekudesh li. Okay, if he says to his friend, if your wife gives birth to a girl, she'll be betrothed to me, the baby. Okay? Now, this, we're going to see later that the Gemara is going to assume, or maybe even in the Mishnah here, it's unclear whether this whole part in parentheses is part of the Mishnah or not, that if she's actually pregnant, it would make a difference. In other words, here we're talking about that she's not pregnant. She's not even pregnant. And he says, if your daughter gives birth to a girl, right? He's got a good friend. He says, listen, if your daughter gives birth to a girl, I'll be betrothed to her. What?
Your wife.
Sorry, your wife gives birth to a girl, I'll be betrothed to her. Eina mekudeshet. All these cases, not mekudeshet. What's the main common denominator? This is what we call davar she'eino bala olam. It's something that's not in existence right yet. The person isn't Jewish. The woman, right?
The slave isn't free.
What?
The slave isn't free.
The slave isn't free. The there's an isur that prevents them from getting married. Okay, so
the wealth isn't there.
Right. The wealth?
No, that was the previous case.
Right, now we're talking about and then the last one is the real Davar Shelo Ba'al Olam, right? There's not even a baby in existence yet. Okay? Now there's this line, I'll read it, but it's unclear whether this is actually part of the Mishnah or not, or was added in, and we'll see in the Gemara quotes it. As from the Gemara, it seems very clear that this wasn't part of the Mishnah, because the Gemara quotes it in someone else's name who says it about our Mishnah. If his friend's wife was pregnant and it was already, what's hukar ubara? She's 3 months pregnant. Everyone, she's showing basically. Dvarav kayamim. Then it's good. V'im yalda nekeva mekudeshet. Okay, so therefore, his words are valid. And if it, right now, 50-50 chance, if it happens to be a girl, then he'll be betrothed to that girl. Okay. So there, that's fits in with this Davar Shelo Ba'al Olam because it's already somewhat in existence. And now we're going to get into a whole discussion later in the daf about at what stage is something in existence, right? Now, it's interesting here about childbirth, particularly as many women died in childbirth and babies didn't necessarily make it. Interesting that, you know, Mishu Karu Bara, they already think it's good enough to go to say that this is valid. Although, on the other hand, you could say, Dvarav Kayamim, it's still, obviously, if something happens down the road, it won't come into fruition anyway. But it's interesting. And then obviously the 3 months could be a few things, right? It could be number one, no one really, maybe he didn't even know she was pregnant. So can it be considered Davar Shelo Ba'al Olam if, can it be Davar Shelo Ba'al Olam even if you don't know that it exists, right? Let's say she was pregnant, but he had no idea, right? How did people know they were pregnant in those days? I have no idea. Did people know they were pregnant before? I mean, I'm sure women could sense that they were pregnant, but did anyone else know? You know, and the other thing, obviously, is that many of us know that early pregnancies don't always make it, right? So most of us, in general, you know, will wait 3 months to start telling people because maybe it won't work. So anyway, there's a lot to think about there. Tanan Hatan. Now we're going to quote a Mishnah that relates to this issue. Ein tormi min hatalush ala mechubar. We've learned before that you can't take truma on something that's chayav in truma to something that's not. You have two piles of fruits. One is chayav in truma, one is not chayav in truma. You can't say, oh, I'm taking a part of these fruits to take care of my truma for those fruits. So here it says, when something is attached to the ground, you're not you're not chayav in truma yet. You're only chayav in truma once it's cut from the ground, and generally you would put it in a pile, and after it was in the pile, the carry, then it would be chayav in truma. So it says here, ein tumim min atalusha lemechubar. You can't take truma from something that's detached on something that's attached to the ground, because something that's attached to the ground is not chayav in truma. Ve'im taram, ein trumato truma. And if you did it, your truma is not valid. Ba'amine Rav Asi Rabbi Yochanan. Rav Asi asked Rabbi Yochanan a question. Amar, what if he says, Perot arugazo tlushim, this bed of fruits are detached. Yihiyu truma al perot arugazo mechubarim. This will be truma for my garden bed over there that's attached to the ground. Perot arugazo mechubarim, or this stuff that's attached to the ground, yihiyu truma al perot arugazo tlushim, will be truma for the ones that are detached. Lechisha yitalshu, sorry, I said it wrong. Perot arugazo tlushim, lechisha yitalshu. He says, these perot that are attached will be truma for my ones that are detached, okay, when they get detached. In other words, when the mechubarim become detached, then the truma will take effect. So here he's giving a future situation that will work, because then his mechubarim will be tlushim. So he says, at the moment that I cut them off the ground, I detach them, then they will automatically become truma for that pair. Mahu, does this work? So now what would you say? In a sense, it's devar shelo ba'al olam, because they're not chayav in truma presently. But what does he say? Amar le, Rabbi Yochanan, this is Rabbi Yochanan Shita. Kol shebiyado, lav kemechusar ma'aseh adame. If you're going to say devar shelo ba'al olam, it's only if you can't control it happening. But since you can cut this whenever you want, you have the power to turn these mechubarim into tlushim, that's not considered davar shelo ba'al olam. That works. It's not really like amigo, because amigo means because you could have done something and you didn't do so. I mean, I understand why you're saying it sort of works that way. But it's more saying, what is davar shelo ba'al olam? It's something that you don't have control, right? You don't have control over it coming into existence, whether the woman's going to have a baby or not, whether, right? Those are things that are totally beyond your control. Whether someone's going to convert, now they're going to question all the cases based on this. They're going to say, you know, well, what do you mean? You can convert if you want, right? You can, so where do we, and this is going to be a very interesting discussion. This is a very basic sugya about davar shelo ba'al olam. First of all, we'll see there's a machloket about it. Some people say you can. Even the ones who say you can, though, there has to be some sort of existence to the item before. So the question is, what kind of existence? And here is Rabbi Yochanan Shita, that if you can control the outcome, then you can do it. Etive. Now we're going to question this from our Mishnah. Ha'omer li'isha harem mekudesha li lachar she'etgayer, lachar she'etgayri, lachar she'eshtachri, lachar she'etishtachri, lachar she'yamupalech, lachar she'etamurachotech, lachar she'yachlos lachivimech. Okay, maybe the death case is not exactly right. I mean, you could kill the guy in theory. Okay, but let's not go there. Eina mekudesha. Bishlama kulhu, most of these cases are fine. We understand, because lav biyado. They all work with what Rabbi Yochanan says. Because, right, you're not going to kill the guy. You're not in control of whether she does chalitza. You're not in control of most of these cases. Ela ger, have biyado. But ger, you can convert if you want. So what does he say? No. Ger nami lav biyado. To Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. By the way, before we even read on, this sounds very much like nowadays,
it's
right?
It's really not
in people's control. Right, exactly. People are not, it's not so easy to convert. Interestingly enough, it's not exactly what they say, though, here, which makes you wonder. Maybe it was easier to convert, if you think about that. I mean, that's the whole debate today. You know, how much does someone, you know, how complicated is the process? Nowadays, it's become very complicated. So anyway, Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, ger tzarich shlosha. My time mishpat ktiv be kidin. Miyemar demizdake kule hanetlata. So in order to convert, what do you need? You need a beitin. You need three people. Because it says mishpat, okay, that it's mishpat achad yelachem kager keezrach, okay, which isn't really about converting, but it's saying they will have the same law. So they darshan here, in order to become a ger, you need a mishpat, you need a beitin. And how do you know, now it's not how do you know they're going to convert you, but mizdakakule hanetlata. How do you know that you're going to find three people that are willing to sit on a beitin and convert you? Now maybe you could say, It's to find three people that are willing to convert you is not so simple, right? Because people, you know, are hesitant to convert, or I don't know what exactly, but we'll see later on where we'll see that the Mefreshim say, why don't you say the same thing later on? And we'll make a distinction, okay, between that and a Shifcha. Anyway, the concept is that it might not be easy for a ger to get three people together to convert. So even though he wants to, it's not totally biyado. Matkifla Rav Abba Bar Mama. Rav Abba Bar Mama questions. Ela me'ata hanotem pruta l'shipchato v'amar haram mekudeshali l'achar she'eshtachurech hachanami d'havi kiddushin. Well, if you're going to say that, though, right, what's the issue? If you give a pruta to a shipcha and you say, you're betrothed to me after you are freed, also it should be kiddushin, right? Because also it's biyado, right, or biyada. So what do they say? Now, in theory, what could they have said here? They could have said it's the same thing. She also needs shlosha. So the Mefreshim question this, and what do they say? They say, well, she needs shlosha, but it's easier for a shipcha to get shlosha. Why? Because her master could come along. And it's here, this is the man to his master, right? The man to his, the adon to his shipcha. He says to her, you'll be betrothed to me once I free you. So now, well, on the one hand, he needs like a ma'amad shlosha also to convert her. She has to do a tefillah. But some people say, first of all, maybe she doesn't need the shlosha. And even if you would say she does, it's easier for him, because he's a Jew, to get three people together to do a beit din. Whereas for a convert, right, this is a sad reality, right, that someone on the inside, it's much easier for them to get it. But someone on the outside isn't going to be able to.
I can do it.
Yeah. Okay. So now that's not what the Gemara answers, even though, and some people say the Gemara actually could have answered the same thing, but they didn't because they didn't, right? This is, we're going to see that there's a lot of debate here. I'm not sure I'm going to get into all of it, but many of these questions and answers, you could have answered one with the other, but the Gemara gives different answers for each one. The assumption is she's a Shifcha Knanit. Well, that's why they say that she might not need shlosha. It's not as much of a process as, right? Although they're not discussing the process. They're discussing the collecting three people to do it. But it could be that it's easier to get three people to agree to it, whereas the three people to agree to a conversion might be more complicated. Definitely, it's a simpler, and that could be another reason.
But this assumes that the person who wants to marry her is the adon.
Yeah, exactly. Right, you're right. That's true. I agree. Right, as I was teaching it, I switched into saying it was the Adon, because I realized if we're going to say it's Biado, then you'd have to say this. But, 1 second, I want to check one thing.
That's what the mission was.
Right, so here they're saying, right, what they're suggesting is, right, Rav Abba Bar Mamal is giving a case where someone gives a pruta for a shifcha. Notice he didn't quote the Mishnah. He said, or you'd go, you know, according to, if you give a prutado shipcha and you say, you'll be mekudeshet after I free you, then it also shouldn't be kiddushin. And the assumption was, it is, he's asking what you're going to say, it's kiddushin. And the assumption was that it's not going to be kiddushin. It's not the case of the Mishnah, but it's a very similar case to the Mishnah. And they're saying, if it would be the case of the Mishnah, where it was the Adon himself, I should point this out, that there's a difference here, since if it would be the Adon himself, would it work? That's what he's questioning. And he doesn't think it would really work. And he's saying that that shouldn't, the Mishnah gives a broad case of anyone being released. But he's suggesting that, he assumes that there wouldn't be a difference whether it's the Adon saying, when I released you, or anybody saying it. It should all be the same halacha. And therefore, why wouldn't this be the case if it's biado? He assumes that that's the case. So now, what do they answer? Hachi hashta, you're comparing these things. Hata meikara behema. You're not going to like this one. Hashta dat acheret. Okay? In this case, she switches from being a behema. Okay? This is an unfortunate comparison here. There's this concept that, where do they connect to? Oh. Shvulachem po machamor with Abraham. And he meant with the avadim. So they say that an eved knani is like a behema. Okay, they're darshan from there. And they say, therefore, she's turning from a behema into a whole different being. So you can't, there's like a change of status. Okay, but status from behema to other being. Now, this is again, you could question, well, what about the non-Jew? It's also a change of status. Now, you could say, right, here's a positive source about non-Jews, at least, that a non-Jew doesn't have the status of a shipcha knanit, right? That's a much lower status than a non-Jew, which is interesting because the Shifra does some mitzvot, right? You would think that they'd be maybe at a better...
closer.
Right. But it's actually, in from this sugya, if you, again, if you assume that each answer is particular to that case and couldn't be applied to the other cases, then you would say that there's something different about the change of status from a Shifra to a Jew than there is from a non-Jew to a Jew. Whereas Hashta dat acheret, but in the case of the biyado of the truma, right? That's a smaller change of status. It's just turning something into truma. It's not a big difference. Vela, okay. So that's Rabbi Yochanan who says this biyado. We asked some questions. Now we're going to say Vela hada amar Rabbi Yoshia hanotein pruta liishto. Rabbi Yoshia said, if you give a pruta to your wife, ba'amarla harat mikudeshet lila harsha agarshech. If you say you'll be betrothed to me after I divorce you, okay, meaning right now they're married. If you were to do kiddushim when they're married, it's irrelevant. So therefore, sevar shelo ba'al olam, because it's not in existence. The possibility of him betrothing her is not in existence when he's already betrothed to her. But if he says to her, after I divorce you, right, so now what should we say here? Right, it doesn't work, okay? But you should say that hachanami le Rabbi Yochanan to havu kiddushin. Why? It should work according to Rabbi Yochanan. Nihi de biyadola garsha, biyadola katsha. It's in his control to divorce her and in his control to betroth her again. So therefore, it should work if we're going to say that davar shelo ba'al olam is only under the condition that it's not in your control. And this is something that's totally in his control. So now what do they say? Tifshot, you can answer it, debai Rabbi Yoshia, hanotein shtei prutolisha, v'achan amar la hitkatshili ayom, B'achad amar li, hitchadshi li la'achar shagar shech. Tifsho mina, delo havi kiddushin. One second. I thought... one second. I'm going to check one thing. Tifsho... okay, I guess they're going to answer it later. I thought, okay, I'm just confused about the flow, the exact flow for a second. I'm sorry. Okay, I read it wrong. So they're saying, would you also say according to this? Right, I read it wrong. It's Nihidi Biadola Garsha. It biadola kadsha. I read it as a. It's like this. It's nihi biadola garsha. You might think it's in his control to divorce her, but biadola kadsha. Can he betroth her? Why can't? Why is it not totally in his control to betroth her?
Somebody else could do it after.
Well, someone else could do it, but more so, she has to consent, and she might not. After he divorces her, she might not be so happy to go back and be betrothed to her. So that's the answer to the first question. Okay, I thought the answer was coming up, but I missed it in the words. So that's how we read it. Nihi to be adola garsha, be adola kadsha. Right? Does he have the control to do the kiddushin after that? Not necessarily.
Because he divorced her, it wouldn't work?
Well, just, we don't know. We don't know that she's going to, what do you mean?
All these cases that we've already stated.
Yeah,
haven't looked at, right.
So that's because the assumption is, right, so we're going to see another case after, and I also was questioning that. The assumption is that if you're standing here right now and doing an act of kiddushin, the point is that she agreed.
Right.
But if this, while you're married to her, and he tries to betroth her on based on some future this, we have no idea what her dad's going to be later on. If a man comes to a woman and says, I'm going to betroth you on the condition that I, within 30 days, I this and that, where at that point she's agreeing to it. So there is consent. But if he's saying, and the assumption...
the baby couldn't consent.
What?
The potential baby couldn't consent.
That's true. The baby couldn't consent, but there the father was consenting for the baby.
Because it was a minor.
There was consent at the moment, okay? And there was an option for the kiddushin to be chal. Here we're talking about that the kiddushin is only going to take, even if, obviously here it's also going to take effect later, but there's an act of kiddushin going on now. Now the act of kiddushin is irrelevant. She's already betrothed. So there's no, her consent right now is irrelevant because there's not even a possibility for kiddushin right now. So it's going, I agree that there's a little, it's not perfect, but that's as close as I got to understanding it. So now we're going to bring another case. Tifsho tibayr of Yoshia, hanotein shtei prutot lisha. Now this is going to be the difference, okay? Here, at this moment, he gives two prutot to an isha. Now, they're not betrothed yet. Be'achat amar la hitkadshili hayom. Okay, be betrothed to me today. U'be'achat amar la hitkadshili la'achar shagarshech. Okay, so tifsho mina tilo hava kiddushin. So now, right, are we going to say here that it's not kiddushin because, again, right, the second one, meaning which one? The first one can obviously take effect. But the second one, so now what was the hava mina? That maybe right now there's consent and there's kiddushin can be chal right now, even though this obviously can only take effect later once they're first betrothed, then they're divorced, and then they'll get married. So maybe it would work, or maybe it wouldn't work. So what do they say? Dilma kihechi detafsi kiddushin hasha tafsi nami la'acharken. In other words, since the kiddushin can be chal now, right? Maybe it could also be chal la'achar mikin. In other words, first they think maybe it can't, then they say, no, this one is actually different. And this one, since the actual kiddushin could take place right now, therefore we could say that it would work. Tanya kavatei de Rabbi Yochanan. Now we're going to bring a bright to the Prus Rabbi Yochanan, which is basically almost exactly what he says. And so now we have support for him from a Tanaitic source. Ein tormim minatalusha lemechubar ve'im taram ein trumato truma. Okay, so you can't take from something detached on something that's attached. And if you did, it doesn't work. Ketzad. Amar perot arugazo tlushin yutruma perot arugazo mechuberet. Right, this garden bed of detached stuff will be truma on this garden bed of attached. Or perot arugazo mechuberet yutruma al perot arugazo tlushin. Or the opposite. Lo amar klum. Doesn't work. Aval, but what if, amar lechisha yitalshu, if you say when they will be detached and then they eventually get detached, tvarav kayamin. Okay, that's his approach. So it works if it's biyado. That's a Tanaitic source that fits in with Rabbi Yochanan. Now we're going to see the alternate opinion. The Braita continues. Yeter al ken amar Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov afilu amar perota regazo tlushin yutrumal perota regazo mechuberet or perota regazo mechuberet yutrumal perota regazo tlushin. If you say, when these become a third of the way and they get detached, now we've talked about this before, that a third of the way, it's already considered your chayav and truma. Once it's a third ripened, okay? Once it's grown a third of to where it's going to grow. So if you say lechashiyaviu shlish v'yitzlashu, and then they did, then dvarav kayamim. Okay, even though, what do we see here? These fruits before they're a third are not really considered fruits at all. So here you have his opinion, and we're going to get to this more tomorrow, that you can do a kinyan or a kiddushin or a truma or whatever it is on davar shelo bala olam. In other words, these are not considered bala olam. But now we're going to see to what extent does he say this. Okay, I'm a rabbi. So now there's going to be two versions of what Rabbi said about Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, and there's going to be, two versions of a machlok at Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef about in what case he was referring to. Lo, I'm a rabbi. Lo, I'm a Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, ela b'shachad, aval ba'agam, lo. He only said this about fruits, right? Now, when's he doing it? He's talking about these fruits before they were third grown, but fruits or whatever they are, crops that can be used as animal food. Okay, as fodder. If the animals can eat it, then it already has enough chashivut to be considered davar shebala olam. And now it's all a matter of gradations, right? When does something become davar shebala olam? But if it's ba'agam, if it's soft stuff, that's not considered useful for anything, then it has no chashivut at all and you can't do it. Rav Yosef Amar afilu ba'agam. Even if it's soft, okay, he holds, according to him, it's the most extreme opinion, that even if it can't be used for anything, you can still be mekadesh based on this. As long as you say when it becomes useful, right, then the truma will be taken. My mashma dehay agam lishna debutzlinahu. How do you know that this is what an agam means? I'm a Rabbi Lazar. I'm a kra halichov ka agmon rosho. That means to bow down like the agmon is bowed down. It means it's something that's very soft that bends down. It's a crop that, you know, like a reed or something that grows. It's a, what is it?
Bulrush.
It's a bulrush, right. That grows and droops over, so it's not useful for anything. Okay, that was a side thing. Kiman Azla, now this continues. Remember, I told there's going to be two versions. So now they're going to say, according to this, Kiman Azla Hadatanya, Ha'omer Lechavero. Now they're saying, this is a Braita, okay? This is what I told you. Maybe part of our Mishnah, but it seems like it's not. According to the Gemara, it's not. Hadatanya, Ha'omer Lechavero, Im Yalda Yishtachani Kevam Bekudeshet Li, Lo Amar Klum, Va'amar Rabbi Hanina, or this actually, I think, is our Mishnah. In other words, they're taking our Mishnah, or it could be a Braita, where the Braita's quoting the first line of our Mishnah and then continuing. Va'amar Rabbi Chanina, and here's that line. Lo shanu ela she'en ishtom u'beret, aval ishtom u'beret v'rav kayamin. Right? So kiman, who does this go like? Ike Rabba, if it's like Rabba, kishu karu bara. And Ike Rav Yosef, afa pishalo hu karu bara. Notice it just said, if his wife is pregnant. Right. So now they're going to say, well, if they held like Rabba, then you'd have to say, what's the comparison of being useful for animal fodder, right? Kishu karu bara. And if you say it could be anything, then you'd say it, right? Like Rav Yosef, then you would say, even if lohu karu bara. Okay, that was the first version. Now we're going to read the second version. Some people say that the machloket was different. Ika de amre, amar Rabba, lo amar Elazar ben Yaakov, ela b'shachat debei kivsha, ava b'shachat debei shakya lo. When you're talking about stuff, first of all, they're both going to agree here that it has to be useful for animals to eat. Okay, so according to this, that's why I said the Rav Yosef in the first reading was the most extreme opinion. Even if it's not useful for anything, it's still considered something. Here we're going to say, everyone agrees it has to be shachat. It has to be animal fodder, lefachot. Okay, there has to be some use for it. Then they're going to distinguish between different types. So if it's animal fodder, debei kivsha, which can grow, okay, will grow whatever your thing is that you're growing, is already useful for an animal, but all the more, when it's going to grow, it'll grow based on rainwater. It'll definitely happen. Aval b'shachat, debei shakya, but if you have to irrigate it, and it's not going to grow if it's not irrigated properly, then low. Then it's not considered davar shabal olam because it's dependent on all sorts of factors which may or may not happen. Now, this is strange because you would think maybe the opposite, right? The whole thing of Rabbi Yochanan was it has to be in your control, but here they're not saying that. It's very interesting. Right. So I thought that was interesting. I don't know. I didn't figure out how that works in with that because it seems to me to be different. I think the issue is if you know agriculture, what do you say?
The behavior brings the rain.
The behavior brings the rain, right? That's true. But I think the concept is that there's certain things. What does it mean to grow based on rainwater? It means it doesn't need a lot of water. I think it's really, if you look at it in that way, this can grow even if it doesn't rain very much, even if, right? If it needs irrigation, then it's something that may or may not grow. So there's less of a chance that it's actually going to make it. I think it's more distinguished. It's not necessarily man-made versus right God-related, but I think it's more how much water does this really need, and therefore will it really get what it needs?
It relates more to the Davar Shebaal HaOlam. Is it Davar Shebaal HaOlam or not?
Right.
Is it something that can exist like the baby?
Right. Can it exist? Right. Will it exist without anybody doing anything to it, basically? I think that's really the way they view the rainwater, and not so much it needs a lot of rainwater. If it needs a lot of rainwater, well, then it might be something you might need to irrigate. Right.
To that analogy with Jonathan, then the difference between a fetus, which is dependent on the mother, is very different than...
Right, but there's something about it's already going to grow.
Right, a fetus is dependent on the mother, but in a sense, even if the mother doesn't eat much, the fetus will take everything from the mother that it needs, and you know, the mother might not make it very much, but the fetus often will survive, although again, you have to question in those days. That's why I find this sugi very interesting in terms of the fact that there was a lot of death in childbirth, and it doesn't really relate so much to that. They do view an embryo as being something viable. Okay, so now, what do they say? So now, Rav Yosef will say, afilu b'shachat tebei shakya, right? He thinks even that kind of crop is fine. Kiman azla, so now, according to who? Now you have to read the sugya according to this reading. Kaman azla hadatanya, haomer lechavero im yalda yishtachana kevam mekudeshali, lo amar klum. Amar Rabbi Chanina, lo shanu elek she'en ishtom uberet, aval ki ishtom uberet rav kayamin. Kiman, mishu kikshu karu bara, v'divre hakol. What do they say? According to this, everyone would agree that it at least needs kishu karu bara. If it's not at that stage, right? They're comparing the hukaru bara to the you know, being roi for an animal to eat. So now they're saying everyone would agree then that it's kishu hukaru bara, and that's, you know, everyone agrees you need a minimal. So now we have two shitot of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, or really three, right, as to what extent does he think davar shelo ba'al olam? Can it be just anything, any little something? Does it have to be a noticeable something that at least wrote away to animals or, you know, with the fetus, shukaru bara, or does it need even more than that, right? According to the fact that it needs, right, it could be a shachat, but it has to be something that can survive on its own. And then, right, we would say with the woman that the assumption is the embryo could survive on its own. Okay, we'll stop here. Then we're going to see tomorrow that he's not the only one who holds this. They're going to say that Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, Rebbe, and Rabbi Meir all hold that you can be machne davar shelo ba'al olam.
It's interesting that the